Welcome to the 73 Dream Studios Variety Show.
All right, welcome everyone to a new episode of Comic Chatter. It's me, Ray.
And it's your girl, Cicely.
All right, Cicely, are you ready? Because we're going to be talking about Morbius today.
Oh, dear God.
I'm going to get this question out of the way right now. Before we watched this movie, did you know who Morbius was?
No.
Okay, well, that's so now you got that out of the way. Cicely did not know who Morbius was. I did know who Morbius was. So
surprise.
We already have two different kinds of viewers going into this. Some quick facts out of the way. Get some credits out there. Daniel Espinosa was attached as director. Matsuzama and Burke Sharpless were writers. Avi Arad, Matt Tolmick, and Lucas Foster were producers, alongside production companies Columbia Pictures, Marvel Entertainment, Arad Productions, and Matt Tolmick Productions. Oliver Wood was cinematographer. Pietro Scalia was editor. This film was released April 1st of 2022, so we're doing this really off the cuff as compared to Spider-Man. Spider-Man, we waited like months to get an episode out. This film is still in fucking theaters. And if you guys are new to this podcast, we're discussing full spoilers. So if you want to see this film, like, no spoilers, pause this episode, buy a ticket, go watch it. But if you're not sure whether it's worth it or the money or not, Cicely, would you say this was worth the money we spent?
No.
I'll say it's not worth the money to watch it in theaters, but it's worth the money to buy or rent on digital. So do with that what you will. Make your decision now whether you want to get the spoilers, because we're about to go in. This movie was made on a budget of $83 million. As of time of this recording, it has made $131.3 million, so it's already turning a profit. And now to go over the cast, because Lord knows I'm not going to remember hardly any of these people's names as we go over the plot. Jared Leto as Michael Morbius, the main character, genius scientist. Matt Smith as Milo Morbius, really Lucian. Main antagonist, the adopted brother of Michael. Adria Arjona as Martine Bancroft, the main love interest, also a scientist. Jared Harris as Dr. Emil Nicholas, the adoptive father figure and a doctor who specializes in caring for people who have incurable diseases. Al Madrigal as Alberto Rodriguez, a comedic FBI agent, and Tyrese Gibson as Simon Stroud, an FBI agent that was actually pulled from a comics. Reports indicate that there are actually deleted scenes featuring him with the cybernetic arm that he's known for in the comics. But I'm gonna tell you right now, they all got fucking cut from this film. Because I did not know this fucker was Simon Stroud the entire time. I thought he was just some random FBI agent. I did not connect that he was from the comics, but I digress. Alright, did you have anything to say before we jumped right into the plot, Cicely?
No.
Alright, so the opening scene of this film, it's literally the scene you've seen in all the trailers. If you watch trailers, I have a few friends who literally avoid trailers like the plague. And they're...
That's interesting, because like half the time, stuff that's in trailers isn't even in the movie. So.
Especially with Marvel. And, yeah. And that was the case with a lot of these Morbius trailers, but this is a scene that was in every trailer. It's Morbius with his team showing up at a cave full of vampire bats. And Morbius is catching them, and he just cuts his own hand open to make all the bats come at him. So they do, and I don't know how they actually catch the bats, because, like, the bats literally just get the fuck out of the cave, and they start fucking up the helicopter, but...
Yeah.
We never see how they actually trap them. But then we go back to, like, a hospital in Greece. Michael's 10 years old. Some kid, and he's in that hospital for people with incurable diseases. I don't know if they ever actually say what incurable disease he has.
No, not that I remember.
I know Michael says that there's something missing from their DNA. That's like all they allude to, really. Michael, another kid is seated next to Michael in the bed next to his, and he's like, "Sup, Milo?" And the kid's like, "Oh, my name's Lucian." "No, your name's Milo." Just like the kid that was here before you was Milo. And the kid before him was Milo. I don't even remember the first Milo. And I'm just like, okay, this kid's already a douche. Like, Like, what fucking...
I didn't see him as a douche.
Another fucking kid. A kid
I just saw him as somebody who has been there for, like, for a very long time and has just given up on wanting to become actual friends with the people.
This kid hasn't... This is another kid with an incurable disease. He could literally die the next day. And he's like, hi, I'm Lucian. You have no fucking identity to me. You are just another fucking number, you insignificant worm. Like, oh my god. But Michael proves to have a heart of gold at the age of 10. Who knew? I guess you do start to grow empathy as a child. Fucking Lucian. Lucian's fucking, like, monitor or machine that's reading... I thought I was just reading his vitals. Turns out the machine was keeping him alive. Because the machine starts failing. Lucian starts failing at living. And Michael, like, takes a spring out of his pen... and uses it to fix the machine and save Lucian slash Milo's life. Just to be clear, we're calling him Milo from now on because apparently Lucian also just agrees, fuck Lucian. That's a terrible name. I'm going to be Milo from now on. But anyway, so the doctor, I already forgot his name. You see how quick that was? But the doctor takes 10-year-old Michael and is like, hey, I can send you to a school. You're clearly a genius. You're going to become a doctor. I don't know how the fuck they took a kid who made a successful engineering feat and were like, you're going to be a doctor of medicine. Clearly. Like, there's totally a delineation in there somewhere where you can just become a doctor of medicine. But they do that, and Michael's like, yeah, I have a dream. I'm going to cure myself and my brother, Milo, because apparently they're brothers now. And he gives Milo a letter. Milo loses the letter, like the little punk that he is.
Because he decides to read it by the open window.
And he's so fuck... God, child Milo is so stupid because he literally goes outside.
Yeah, before, like, even before this scene, they literally make a point to show there's, like, a school right outside of the building that they're in, and it's, like, you know, a bunch of regular school kids, and literally...
Who have no empathy, mind you.
Michael literally tells him, yeah, it's not a good idea to go out there, like, after school releases or whatever.
Yeah, because kids are douches, and, like, of course Milo loses the letter right as the school bell rings, and he's like, and instead of just being like, oh, well, he's like, no, this letter is very significant to me. This boy saved my life 5 minutes ago. I need to get this letter. So he literally goes out there on his cane and, like, there's three kids. And it's the same three kids that were, like, egging the building earlier and are just, like, they're just making fun of the letter and how sweet it is. And then they play keep away from Milo and Milo finally loses his shit. And it's like, give it back! And just, like, knocks a kid out with his cane. This kid didn't get the fuck back up. This kid did not get back up. He literally laid his ass on the ground. He sold it like a champ. And then the other two kids just beat the fuck out of Milo until the doctor comes to save Milo. And I immediately was like, all right, Milo's the villain. Clearly. Like, you would think he'd be a good guy, but no. He got the shit beat out of him as a kid. He's gotta be a bad guy. There's only one way that Marvel can go with this.
Yeah, what good guy would hit another child with their cane?
Oh, this guy's this kid's a cripple. He's constantly bullied. He almost died. And Sony and Marvel are just like, we got a candidate for the best villain of the year right here.
Like,
no one's gonna sympathize with this fucker. Like,
it wasn't even like he, like, pushed the kid away with his cane or anything. He literally smacked the kid, like, dead in the head with the fucking,
like,
thing.
Full on. Like, it was quick, so I don't know if he got him in the temple or the jaw, but wherever he got him, he knocked him the fuck out. Like, and I'm just like, this kid was on death's door.
Yeah.
Like, 10 minutes ago.
He was limping out of this building. And he's now, like, all of a sudden, he's able to
give
hit
give me my
somebody.
Letter. He's Tiny Tim in this shit. He's like, give me my letter, please. Please, give it back. I said give it back! Oh, my God. And now we jump ahead 25 years later. Jared Leto. I want to point out, Jared Leto is known for being a method actor. Not meth head actor. I don't want to mispronounce that. Method actor.
Even though he looks like a meth.
Oh my god. That, meth head. That's just rude.
No, for real, though.
This, like, is a man that's sick. His character.
I was like, god damn, they really wanted to make him look like he was weak. Because, like, there's a moment where he, like, takes off his shirt and he just looks like fucking skin and bones.
Right? And he, like... He's about to accept a Nobel Peace Prize, and he's just like, fuck Nobel Peace Prizes. Like, but anyway, Jared Leto's known for being a method actor, and that got him a lot of flack for Suicide Squad, because so many people were pissed at him, because of course he's the Joker. So, method acting as the Joker. But they literally basically, I feel like they wrote this role for him, because people were like, oh yeah, he didn't even method act for this. Because he basically already was Michael Morbius. He already had that ego. And I'm like, Jesus shit. Like, so many people hate Jared Leto. And the fact that they're like, oh yeah, Michael Morbius is kind of a douche. And that's why Jared Leto didn't have to method act. And I'm like, wow. The criticism on that. But yeah, so Morbius is 35 years old. Publicly turned down the Nobel Peace Prize. Which is for synthetic blood. Like, throughout this whole film, they literally talk about how he saved millions of lives with synthetic blood. He's got a colleague, Martine Bancroft, who basically calls him out and is like, oh yeah, does your benefactor Milo? Yeah, Milo's still alive somehow. She's like, yeah, does Milo know what we're really doing? And Morbius is like, I don't know what you're talking about. We're just making some synthetic blood up in here. And Martine's just like, oh, are we? And turns on a light and there's all the bats that he fucking took from who knows where, Costa Rica or whatever. And he's just like, oh, yeah, those. So basically, vampire bats are able to take all this blood, but they don't suffer from any blood disease because of something in their DNA. So I'm going to take a splice of her DNA and put it in my DNA because my DNA is missing pieces. And that's his end goal there. That's science, motherfucker. So he does that. Well, he injects it in a rat. The rat dies. And then he has to put a poor little girl in the fucking medically induced coma because her blood disease is killing her. And then while they're doing that, literally, the door to this lab that has a mega secret experiment in it is wide open for everyone to see. And Bancroft just looks back and the rat's alive again. So she's like, Michael, it worked. And then we get to see Morbius again. I'm not Morbius. Oh, Milo Morbius. Because apparently in the end credits, he's credited as Milo Morbius. So he literally takes Michael's last name for some reason. And Milo is played by, as I said before, by Matt Smith. It's been so long since I've seen Matt Smith perform in anything. He was Doctor Who for a while. Spoiler alert for you. I've started showing Cicely Doctor Who. She's only on the 10th Doctor, so she hasn't seen Matt Smith yet. But Matt Smith does become the Doctor at one point. And I can see the charisma in this role, even when he's a sickly-ass man. And he's still talking shit. He's just like, oh, Michael, how's it going, you fucker? And... They both hobble around what looks like New York. Was this supposed to be New York, or was it supposed to be, where were they?
I don't know off the top of my head. I mean, it definitely was a city.
Okay, yeah, it is New York. It is New York.
Yeah.
So they're hobbling around New York, and Milo apparently somehow got fucking rich. I have no idea how. They never go into how Milo got rich.
Nah.
But Milo was just like, oh yeah, I'm totally gonna fund these illegal experiments in international waters. So they do that. Michael injects himself after synthesizing the serum again, which for some reason takes a lot of attempts, which I'm confused about because I would have thought that he would have, like, he was recording everything, so I thought he would have already known how to synthesize it, but they were like, oh no, we gotta keep trying until we get this right again. And I'm just like, why? Didn't you already did it? Like, but they started human trials on himself, because, you know, we always know that's gonna work. That always works out, right?
Sure.
Now, do you want to describe what happens after he injects himself?
I can do that. Sure. So obviously he gets injected. They put him into a separate room. I don't know why the ship is designed the way it is. I mean, I just think it's weird. Like, it's definitely designed in a, like, for scientific research, obviously, because why else would they be on this boat internationally? But they have this, like, sealed off room with, like, one of those glass panels so you can look into the room. And obviously, so Martine, like, straps him down and everything, and which I think she should have strapped him down before they injected him.
Yeah, right?
Like, that would have made more sense, but
he had to tell her to strap him down.
They're like, they put him in into the, I don't even know what to call it.
Isolation room, like.
And they seat him down, then she injects him, and then she doesn't do anything until he's like, yeah, you should probably strap me down. That's the whole point.
I'm literally going to start seizing up and convulsing. You should probably do something.
Yeah, like, he literally starts to shake before she's finished.
God damn it, Martine, you're a doctor.
So anyways, you know, she gets him strapped down, she leaves the room, and then he starts to transform.
That's a word, yeah.
He has this transformation moment. I don't even really know.
A lot of it's off screen, too.
Yeah. And then I think he just breaks out of the restraints eventually.
Yeah, he breaks out of the restraints off screen because there's, like, a soldier that comes down and just decides to throw his big dick energy around and is like, oh, yeah, Bancroft, you're a doctor? You're just another fucking lackey, right? Come on, you're like me. Come on, be real with me. Hey, where the fuck's your boyfriend? Oh, he's off in this isolation chamber? He's supposed to be alone? Let's just fucking open the door. Like... And they go in there, and Martine immediately is like, where the fuck is he? He's not strapped in.
Except he's on the ceiling.
Exactly.
Wow.
Spider-Man?
Imagine if he's just... He's just like, I'm Peter Parker.
Oh, shit. We use spider DNA. Fuck.
Oh, my gosh. No, the movie would be better if it led to that.
If it seems like we're this whole podcast is a fever dream, imagine watching this fucking movie.
So yeah, surprise, surprise, he's on the ceiling. And obviously this alerts the fucking, the soldier, whoever the fuck he is, the thug.
Pretty much, he was a little dick. I feel like this movie was fueled by toxic masculinity.
So pretty much all the soldiers that were on the ship were pretty much the NPCs that are in, like, open world Batman games.
Yeah, that's very accurate, actually. That they didn't have names, and they were on screen for as long as it took to be cannon fodder.
So obviously he starts shooting at him, and Martine's like, no, don't do that!
Don't shoot him!
And
I love him.
He does exactly that, and then he gets beat the fuck up.
This is what you gotta do. Don't say the words, don't shoot, because the minute they hear shoot, they're gonna shoot.
Yeah.
Just be like, don't do it. And then they'll be like, okay, maybe not. But this guy was clearly like, I'm gonna fucking murder this guy.
And I'm pretty sure Martine locks them both in there.
Yeah, she literally leaves that guy to die. She gives no fucks.
I mean, she told him not to shoot. And he kind of brought that upon himself.
Meanwhile, like, Michael, like, slowly starts to regain humanity. But, like... Then the other soldiers come in, and they're, like, aiming their guns at the window, and then Michael's just, like, fucking launching himself super speed into the window, and at one point, a soldier shoves Martine out of the way, and she, like, hits her head on something, which, in most of the times in cinema, when someone falls and hits their head, it's like, okay, the human skull is clearly the weakest part on the body, so she's dead now, right? But thankfully not. But they definitely tease that idea, because then when Michael breaks out in his very bestial state, he sees Martine laying on the ground, and he's like, oh, it's on. Like, and proceeds to, like, rip throats out and, like, devours people. Not like, there's no bodies left. It's just, you know, he drains them dry of their blood.
Yeah. It's pretty much a whole chase scene, because basically once he gets out of the concealed portion, they try to fight him, and then other people were like, yeah, I'm out of here. So it's like at least a 5-minute scene of him, like, chasing after people and killing them.
Can we talk about how every time he uses super speed, there's like a cloud of red around him?
It's, yeah, like, I realized throughout the movie that it changes depending on what he's wearing.
Yeah, that's right. Because at some point he's like wearing purple and it's purple clouds. But yeah.
So I think it's like it was part of the echolocation. Like I realized that other people probably don't see it. It's just like a part of.
Yeah.
Whatever. I don't even know how to describe that.
One of the people that worked on the production team, they actually said that an inspiration for that was Pokemon. And I'm like, huh? And they're like, yeah, every time a Pokemon uses a move, there's a visual cue that goes with it. So we want, every time he used super speed, we want there to be a visual cue. And apparently the visual cue for every time he did super speed was that there was just going to be like a cloud of smoke around him.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I guess that makes sense. Like, artistic vision-wise, I guess. You know, you can't be like Quicksilver in the X-Men movies where everything stops. You can't be like the Flash and have lightning shoot out of your body. No, you're a vampire. You gotta have smoke. So after he realizes what he's done, trigger warning for everyone with weak stomachs like me. There's a lot of fucking puke in this film. I was so annoyed by it. Like, literally, he watches CCTV footage of what he's done, and he proceeds to puke up the blood that he drank. And then he's like, all right, deleting all of this. Now I'm going to call the authorities, and now I'm leaving. Which was the dumbest idea. Like, I get that he wanted to call authorities to get Martine some help, but, like, you literally murdered everyone on this ship and left only one woman alive. But you clearly have a male voice. They literally say that. The FBI agents are like, oh yeah, we got Mayday. Was it? And it wasn't Bancroft? Nope. Male. And everyone else on the ship is dead. And it's like, wow, Michael, you're a fucking idiot. Really? So what does Michael do next, my love?
I believe he goes back to his agency. I can't remember what the name of it was off the top of my head.
Oh God, yeah, I'm trying to remember it now too, because I feel, oh my God, because it was, I think it was Horizon Labs, because I remember it was something that connected to the Spider-Man comics.
So yeah, he goes back to New York, and he basically, like, he has that whole montage that every fucking person who gains a new power gets, where they just basically test out what their strengths are.
Yeah.
And he's basically just like recording the progress, although they don't actually, like, I don't remember like them making it clear like how long it took him to like fully understand like what he was capable of, but the montage was like only a couple minutes long.
I mean, it took a while because I know he was timing himself too.
Yeah. But he was, like, he essentially was just like, wow, I'm so much stronger. Now I don't even have to use my crutches. And then you just see him, like, parkour all over the place. And I'm like, okay.
Right.
And apparently he's just, like, cool with the bats now. Because, like, he, like, went into the containment thing that he has them in. And they just, like, were flying around him. And he's just like, they're my family.
Yeah, they, like, they land on his arms and they're just vibing.
So yeah, and he also has echolocation as well. So he was like in the process of figuring out how to focus on it without hearing everything all at once.
And something I thought was really important was he also tests how long he can go without feeding. And he feeds on the synthetic blood, but the synthetic blood does not last nearly as long as regular blood. Because, like, the red stuff versus the blue stuff is what he calls it. And he's like, yeah, at best I can last 6 hours on synthetic blood before I have to feed again. And at one point, he's like, I want to see what happens when I go more than 6 hours without blue blood. And literally worst timing ever, Milo decides to pop in for a visit as this is happening.
Yeah, because we also get a cut to Milo, like, watching on the news about the, like, whole boat situation. And, like, you can definitely tell that he's, like, kind of on to what Michael's doing. Because, like, he knows that Michael had to be a part of whatever happened on the boat. And I also don't remember the name of the doctor, but the doctor is getting sus as well because he walks into the room right after Milo, like, shuts off the TV and he's like, the fuck's going on? And he's just like, wish I could tell you.
Got no clue. I don't know what you're talking about, Dad. fuck off. Like, so Milo decides to visit. He gives Michael the blue blood, and after Michael takes that, he stands up, and Milo's like, "You're walking. This is amazing. Give me what you have." And Michael's like, "Yeah, I can't do that in good conscience. Like, this is a curse. I'm literally going to be a monster." And Milo's like, "So you get to be cured, and I get to die. Is that it?" And he's like, "This isn't living." And they just get to have that philosophical argument of what's worse, living as a monster or living as a cripple, which, yeah. And Milo just gets really pissed off and just leaves. And then I'm trying to remember how they cut, because I know there's a hospital scene. I'm trying to remember how they cut to the hospital. I think, like, Michael's trying to check on Martine. And while that's happening, a fucking, like, no, he got arrested, didn't he? Did he get arrested before or after the hospital? He gets arrested in the hospital, I think, is what happens. Like I said, this movie was like a fucking fever dream. It all started.
Yeah, I just remember that, like, they started asking him questions when he was leaving.
Yeah, he was.
I think it was when he was leaving Horizon, though, because he had just grabbed the synthetic blood.
I think it was because I think they. No, it was at the hospital because they were going to let him go. And then they got the word that there was a murder in the hospital. So they were like, put it on lockdown. So, because there was a nurse that got murdered and Michael found out about it. And he did not know if he blacked out. So he grabbed all the synthetic blood that he could. And he went to leave. And then they stopped him. They being Simon and Al, the FBI agents. And they allude to the cybernetic arm, because Simon's like, "Oh yeah, your fucking blue synthetic blood saved my arm." And I'm just like, did it though, if it's cybernetic? But I don't know. So they and like Michael literally is trying to act sickly, and Al is just like, "Yeah, you doing good? You seem better than on TV." And Michael's like, "We all have our good days and bad days." And then finally, when they were like, "Yeah, we're going to arrest you," Michael's like, "All right, fuck this shit." And just immediately just full on shows his super strength and super speed as he parkours his ass out of there.
Doesn't he hit one of them with the crutches too?
Oh God, that's right.
I'm pretty sure he hits one of them in the nose or something.
Fucking callback to Milo.
Yeah.
And he literally is like, and at one point he almost discovers he can fly. Because, like, he gets up to the roof, and the wind almost carries him off the roof. Like, he's weighing nothing. He's like, "Whoa, dude." But then Simon Stroud is right there, and he's like, "Freeze, motherfucker."
The real mystery is how Simon got up there that fast.
For real.
Like, because they literally showed Michael, like, pretty much, like, jump all the way up to the roof
right?
from, like, the ground floor, and you could see that there was, like, a bunch of floors leading up to the very top of the building. So how the fuck did fucking Simon get up there, like, within a minute or two?
It totally had something to do with a cybernetic arm that we never got to see.
Yeah.
And so then Milo gets arrested, and they get to have a nice little interrogation scene. They fucking bring up so many vampire cliches. Like, in that interrogation scene, Al just has fucking holy water at the ready.
I was so tripped out by this because, like, I honestly don't know what year this is set in, to be honest. Like, it seemed pretty current. Like, it didn't seem like it was set very far in the future.
Yeah.
But, because I remember when I think they might have given a year when they did the first scene in Costa Rica. I know, like, it was a past scene. I can't remember if they actually gave it a date or not, but they definitely didn't give us a clear year or date for the present times that they were shooting.
Yeah.
So I don't know what, excuse me, I don't know what year this is supposed to be set in, but I found it very off-putting how, like, nobody seemed to be surprised about this whole vampire thing. Like,
right?
off the bat, like, once people started dying because their blood were drained from them, like, everybody was just like, "Oh yeah, vampire."
Right, but, like, at the same time, I sort of appreciate that, because if this is set in modern day, you would assume vampire media is in this universe.
Yeah, but, like, I don't know. It just, like, it threw me off for a loop, because, like, the fact that, like, for one, nobody's, like, everybody just assumes that he's a vampire, and for two, like, nobody seems, like, really freaked out about his abilities. Like, during the whole chase scene where they're, like, running after him, nobody's affected by the fact that he has, like, supersonic speed and shit. They're all just like, "Get him!" I'm like, okay?
Yeah. I mean, the only thing we have confirmed is that this is in the same universe as the Venom movies. That's the only thing we have confirmed. So they already, and I don't know how public Venom is. He must be public because everyone knew who the fuck Venom was in this movie for some reason.
But still, like, in the Venom movies, people, like, regular civilians were scared by him. Like, they had some sort of
reaction.
He was
a scary fucking guy.
And Morbius isn't?
As you said, Morbius looks like a fucking crackhead.
I mean, he looks more scary after his transformation.
Him versus Milo in that subway might as well have been Bum Fights R Us. Like, just on steroids
still,
instead,
like,
of crack.
Some sort of reaction would have been nice besides them just acting like this is, like, a regular person they're chasing after.
They're like, get that motherfucker!
Anyways, you can continue.
Oh, God. And then Milo visits him under the premise, the deception that he is his lawyer. And such a cheeky fucking scene. After he leaves, Michael, like, looks over and he realizes Milo left his own cane at the door. And Michael's like, no. And, like, Milo even left him a bag of red. So Milo, like, leaves, like, now we know Milo's a vampire. Milo's not hiding it. Milo fucking murders someone just for the fuck of it. And then Michael literally just, like, drinks the red stuff, hulks out, breaks out of prison, and then we get to see the bum fight in the subway, which Michael loses. Yeah, Michael, it's said that Michael lost because he was unwilling to hurt Milo, whereas Milo just didn't give a shit about anyone. But at that point, Morbius got to meet Bancroft, who explained what Milo had done before acquiring a new lab. They got a new lab now, and I love how Michael gets this lab. He literally just friends a bunch of fucking gangbangers and are like, I'm Venom. Now get the fuck out. And they're like, okay, shit, we don't want to fuck with Venom. He also literally breaks a man's hand in multiple places, which I just loved. He's just like, oh yeah, there's like so many bones in the human hand. Let's look at the phalanges. Ah! Now the metacarpals. Ah! Oh yeah, I could do this all day. How many bones you want me to fucking break? Like, and then him and, oh my god, and Bancroft, they get to work on creating an anticoagulant, which is supposed to cure Milo of the vampirism, but it would also kill him. And Bancroft's like, who's the second shot for? And Michael's like, because Michael reveals that he's been keeping track, and the blue stuff is no longer keeping him sustained for 6 hours. Now it's down to 4 hours and 22 minutes. So now he's like, yeah, no, but I can't live off the blue stuff forever. Eventually, I'm going to become a monster. So I need to be put down, but I have to make sure Milo gets put down first. So that becomes the new mission here. And gosh, how do we do this here? Milo threatens the father figure, basically under the premise of the father figure always picked Michael over Milo, which the doctor was like, that's not true. I dedicated my life to caring for you. And Milo basically is like, go on, call for him, tell him to come save you. And the guy does that, and using echolocation, Michael finds them, proceeds to, like, try to save the doctor, even though the doctor's already dead at this point. And the doctor's like, you got to stop him. Stop Lucian. And then Michael gets echolocation, and Milo is now threatening Bancroft, and he's just like, oh yeah, go on, call for him. Literally the same fucking thing, just, yeah, call for him. And she's like, no, I'll never do it. And he proceeds to, like, torture her, and she's like, Michael! And then Michael uses echolocation to find where they are, even though it's like, you just left there. You just left there. They're in the same fucking spot.
Well, it's a good thing he can fly.
God damn it, Michael. So he shows up as Bancroft's already bleeding out, and she basically is like, make it worth it. And she basically just tells him to fucking feed off of her. He does. He stands up. And there is a point of contention here. Some people think he did this on purpose. Some people think that he didn't do this on purpose.
but they're saying some of his blood ends up in her mouth, which...
The movie did not make that very clear.
Yeah, I completely missed that. I did not know that happened. I was like, it looked like he bit her lip at one point. So I was like, what the fuck is happening here? But I digress. So then we go into this big final scene between him and Milo. And I gotta say, I was very underwhelmed by this final scene.
Yeah, it wasn't anything spectacular for a final boss fight.
Yeah, I mean, like, I feel like there could have been more to it, but... They hit story beat notes like, oh yeah, Milo is more powerful because he's more willing to do what need to kill. And then Michael's like, ah, you're focused on still being a man. I focus on being the bat. And like, he doesn't actually give that epic of a speech. Like, he literally is just, he just like makes a call or something. And then bats enter the cave system that they're in. And they all, because it's alluded to early in the film that bats, when in a swarm, could pin down an animal 10 times their size. So the bats are literally pinning Milo down. Michael gets on top of him. He sinks the needle into Milo. And even though it doesn't look like he presses down the plunger, Milo is still like, look at me. It's Lucian. And I'm like, why the fuck would you call yourself Lucian? If anything, it would have meant more if you tried calling yourself Lucian this entire movie. And then when you were begging for him to stop, you'd be like, look at me. It's Milo. Like, that to me, that makes more sense. But fuck it. I didn't write the film. And so, Milo dies, I guess. It did not seem clear to me that he died. Did it seem clear to you that he died?
I couldn't say, to be honest. Like, I knew the fight was over, but, like, I wouldn't say it was a very final note.
Yeah, like,
whether he was dead or not.
They barely say anything. Michael gets up. He flies with the vampire bats. With the cloud of purple, we cut back to Bancroft, whose eyes open, and she has red eyes, so she's a vampire now, and we get a hard cut to the credits. And when I say hard cut, I mean hard fucking cut. Oh my god. That was not an ending.
No, definitely not.
Like, what?
Yeah. It was a pretty cheap way to end it. They were just like, yeah. Just cut it there, guys.
All right, we ran out of time. Like, there's going to be a deleted scene, I bet. And it's going to be, like, something even more pointless. And I'm just like, what the fuck? And then we got the post-cred scene. I told Cicely when we went to this film that I was like, I want the post-cred scene to be Andrew Garfield. I want it to be Andrew Garfield because I want the Venom universe to be the Amazing Spider-Man universe. And everything will be right again. And then we get the mid-cred scene and... We get to see it. We get to see the lights, the ripples of the universes colliding from Spider-Man No Way Home. And it's like, it is. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. And we get Vulture. We get Vulture from Spider-Man Homecoming. Just take it over from here.
Yeah, we get to see Vulture. And he talks to Morbius, right?
Yeah.
That's the scene you're referring to?
Yeah, they had two end cred scenes, because the first was Vulture showing up, and then the second was Vulture talking to Morbius. Yeah,
because the first one, there's not really much to talk about besides just Vulture making an appearance.
And apparently there is no Adrian Toomes in this universe, so he gets to walk away scot-free.
So yeah, he basically talks to Michael, and he's just like, hey man... We should work together. I got some pals of mine that want to start a whole crew.
Which, how? How does he have friends in this universe?
And Michael's just like, sure.
And they're alluding to the Sinister Six, which was a fucking movie they were going to make for Andrew Garfield.
He also mentions how, like, he knows that he's there because of Spider-Man, I think.
Which, I don't know how, because he's supposed to, like, he can't know that Peter Parker's Spider-Man. That was literally...
I mean, he doesn't say Peter Parker.
I know. So why the fuck does he care about Spider-Man? And what's he gonna do when he realizes there isn't even a Spider-Man in this fucking universe? There's a fucking Venom!
Tell us how you really feel.
I hate it! Fucking Sony, I have been supporting you this whole fucking time. I have been all for the Venomverse up, and I'm like, yeah, you can save it. You can save it from the criticisms if you just put Andrew Garfield in there. Andrew Garfield alone could just make this film series good. I'm not going to say he can make it great because you can only shine up a turd so much, but he could save it.
And you think Vulture's gonna do that for you? You really think Vulture's gonna do that?
The scene really confused me because, like, it really made me question what Michael's intentions are now. Because, like, I assumed that after he made sure that Milo, like, wasn't a vampire anymore, I thought he was gonna take the serum himself.
Yeah!
Because, like, that's what his intentions seemed to be. Because he was like, yeah, this can't go any farther. Like, I don't want anybody else to have this.
There's, like, no dialogue that leads to him changing his mind.
And now all of a sudden he's like, yeah, I'll be part of a villain group. You just took down a villain. Now you want to be a villain? Make up your fucking mind.
Like, what? Like, he's... And all, everyone online is like, he's just embracing himself now. He's just embracing that he's a vampire. Go fuck yourself. They literally... Like, the all building up to this movie, the fucking director and the writers were like, oh, we're gonna have fun with this because it's gonna be so cool to just have a story arc about a scientist, a doctor of medicine, who now has to take lives. And it's like, yeah, we could deal with the man who swore an oath to save lives, but now he has to take them. And it's like, I get it, that's not an original concept, it's been done to death, but you didn't even do that!
No.
He murders people within 5 minutes of getting his powers! And he doesn't even feel that sorry about it.
I mean, that was fair because the first people he killed were thugs, and literally everybody in the movie was like, yeah, that we don't really care about these people.
We really wouldn't have cared. Like, it was international waters. Like, go fuck yourself. If you didn't care, why the hell are you fucking hunting him down?
Yeah, that part.
But why do we care so much about international waters? The whole point that we did this in international waters was so FBI wouldn't have fucking, like, jurisdiction over this shit. Why are they having jurisdiction over this shit?
And then they arrest him because of the nurse that was killed, even though Milo was the one who did it.
They still blame Michael. They literally found footage that revealed, oh yeah, Michael's not the only vampire. But they never found the other vampire. So now they're like, Michael's the only vampire. So Michael is responsible for literally every death in this film.
This movie's all over the place, if you guys couldn't tell, just from what we've already talked about.
This is why I don't fucking watch it in theaters, because if you watch it in theaters, you're gonna get there, and the fucking lady at the front's gonna be like, well, do you want popcorn? Yeah, I'll take a medium. You sure you don't want a large? No, bitch, I can barely fucking eat a medium. Stop fucking trying to talk me up. I don't care if that's an extra dollar. Just give me my fucking popcorn, bitch.
The popcorn has nothing to do with the movie.
It is the money you are spending just to see the movie. Don't tell me that they don't fucking talk you into this shit because the fucking food costs more than the tickets.
Tell us how you really
just
feel.
Fucking watch it at home. Pay your fucking $3 rental fee to have your shitty ass movie night so you can make out with your girlfriend because we all know you're not, you didn't invite her over to watch this.
Yeah, honestly, I wouldn't even recommend watching it in general. Like, I wouldn't recommend paying for it. Like, if this movie becomes free at some point, which it probably will, then maybe if you really want to see it, then yeah, sure. But I would not recommend paying for it at all.
I walked into this thinking I was going to be the antithesis to you. I was like, I know Cicely's going to hate on it, so I need to give a positive spin. No, fuck that! They pissed me off! You didn't put Andrew Garfield in your film! 0 out of fucking 10! Unwatchable!
No tomatoes for you.
Oh my god.
Well, actually, all the tomatoes. Boo! Throwing tomatoes, throwing tomatoes.
Okay, so I'm gonna take a breath. We're gonna cut to an ad. And then we're gonna talk about some fun facts and some questions. Alright, and I'm cutting to ad now. Are back. All right.
We've cooled off a little bit, but only a little bit.
I'm still a little hot. Man. We're going to cover some fun facts. All right. While filming took place from February 2019 to June 2019, that's only 4 months, the pandemic seriously impacted both reshoots and the release date of the film. The film's release date would then be impacted by the success of Spider-Man No Way Home. I don't know if you remember that. Morbius was legit supposed to air in January.
I didn't even know that.
It was supposed to come out in January, but Spider-Man No Way Home was doing so good that Sony's like, we don't want competition with ourselves. Fucking push it to April.
I didn't even know about Morbius until we saw No Way Home, because that was the first time I had seen the trailer. Because I don't have cable, so I don't see trailers that often unless, like... it happens every once in a while for streaming services, but yeah, like,
a lot of times I'll show you
very commonly for me.
A lot of times I'll show you, like when we used to watch YouTube a lot, I would show you.
Yeah.
All right. The first instance of Morbius failing to make it to film came in 2002. Actually, a mysterious figure was featured in a cameo during 1998's Blade. He was set to appear in Blade 2, but Morbius would be cut when the original director chose not to return to the sequel. Mm. Morbius was also in early talks to cameo along with Blade in Spider-Man Far From Home.
Interesting.
So that's like twice where Morbius almost became a part of the film. I almost said the MCU, but Blade's not in the MCU. Or, well, he's going to be, but it's a different Blade. Anyway. Morbius is currently slated, we talked about this before, about it possibly being free, Morbius is currently slated to be the first Sony/Marvel film to fall under the new 2022 to 2026 deal that Sony has made with Netflix and Disney. So the deal states that Netflix gets first rights to stream the film for up to 18 months, before the streaming rights would then revert to Disney Plus and Hulu.
Interesting.
So there you go. I don't know when, but Morbius is eventually going to go to Netflix. It'll be there for like a year, year and a half, and then it's going to go to Disney Plus and Hulu. Or maybe just Hulu. Because are the Spider-Man films on Disney Plus now?
You're asking the wrong person.
Yeah. Speaking of, and we talked about tomatoes earlier, at time of recording, this film has a Rotten Tomatoes score of 16%.
I would say that's fair.
Now, before I read off these scores, we know that this is set in the Venom universe. Don't be peeking.
I can't even see, to be honest. I don't have my glasses on.
Good, Velma. Anyway, so, so where would you rank these films? We got Venom, Let There Be Carnage, and Morbius. Where would you rank them?
That's kind of difficult. I feel like the first Venom movie would definitely be first.
Yeah, I agree.
But I don't really know. Huh. I guess I would put Let There Be Carnage and then Morbius.
You say Morbius is the worst?
Yeah.
I think I would put Morbius above Let There Be Carnage. Not by a lot, mind you. Mostly because I was more disappointed by Let There Be Carnage. To me, I was like, okay, you proved you can make a good movie. So why the fuck did you give me this garbage?
Yeah.
All right, so by comparison, so we said Morbius currently has a 16%. Venom has a 30%. Let There Be Carnage, 58%.
Damn.
Let There Be Carnage almost has a fresh tomato score.
That's interesting.
And then, just to see if this trend continues, IGN gave Morbius a 5 out of 10. They gave Venom a 4 out of 10. So IGN says Venom, the first one, is worse than Morbius. And they gave Let There Be Carnage a 7 out of 10.
Now that is surprising.
They said that IGN said Let There Be Carnage was good.
They would be one of the only people that said
that. I'm questioning critics right now. What the fuck did they see in Let There Be Carnage that was so much better than Venom? Let alone Morbius. And currently, the last fun fact, currently there appears to be a deal in place where Sony and Marvel can have characters cross universes. Because they are teasing that Tom Holland's Spider-Man may show up in the Sony universe, the Venomverse. However, Marvel currently owns the rights to Blade. We possibly heard Blade teased at the end of the Eternals film. So now it's kind of like, okay, so how is Blade going to interact with Morbius? We got the vampire, we got the Daywalker. But with this deal in place, it's possible that they could meet over 20 years from when they were supposed to meet in Blade 2. That's pretty big. All right, I got 5 questions for you here. Question 1. Do you think it was a good decision to use an original character for the villain?
I think, I guess I'm kind of like in between about it. Like, I don't think it was a good or bad decision. Like, I feel like it was an interesting choice for them to add their own original character in. Do I think he should have been the main villain? Not necessarily, but I don't think it was a good or bad decision.
I think it was good in the sense that Morbius is already supposed to be a villain. Like, Venom, they got away with because there's already a history in the comics of Venom having his own villains. Morbius, not so much. There's, like, maybe one or two.
I didn't even really see Morbius as a villain. I kind of saw him as, I kind of saw him, like, along the lines of, like, a Catwoman type of character where they're, like, they're not 100% like a hero, but they're also not like 100% villain either.
Yeah.
Like, he kind of just like, he follows his own motivations, but that doesn't mean like he's like trying to wreak havoc on the world either.
Okay.
That's like kind of how I saw him through this movie.
So we already know my thoughts on this next question. What do you think of the inclusion of Vulture to this universe?
I thought it was kind of sloppy, to be honest. Like, I feel like it was kind of just, like, a throw-in. That they were like, let's make some sort of connection to something else. Sure, Vulture. Like, it just didn't seem like there was a lot of thought put behind it. It just seemed really weird.
We already know my thoughts. What do you think is in the future for the Morbius character?
I don't know. Who knows if they will even continue Morbius'
story. That was literally what I was going to say. I'm like, huh, I know what's in his future. Canceled.
Yeah, because I already know Jared Leto has faced a lot of a lot of negativity after this role. Like, I've seen
after this role? After every role he's had for like the last 5 years.
Pretty much. They're just like, yeah, this doesn't surprise us.
This guy is getting paid because he's a fucking Johnny Depp ripoff and not even a good one. Hard take.
So, honestly, I would say that Morbius's character would be lucky if they somehow continued doing stuff with him, but I don't anticipate they will be doing anything with him very soon.
I foresee him being included in the Sinister Six movie if that movie also doesn't get canceled for, like, the fourth time.
Yeah.
Alright, what do you wish they did differently in this film?
I wish they did more character development.
Yeah.
Because, like, even though, yes, the movie is centered around Morbius, I feel like they didn't even really develop him that well. And also, like, all the side characters, like, were not giving me anything. Like, I had a hard time caring about any of the characters, to be honest. Like, I slightly cared about Michael, but that was pretty much it. Like, the love interest, very sloppily done. And, like, the officers were just throw-ins, even though, like, they were trying to make them seem somewhat important, but they weren't actually important. Right. And, I don't know, I feel like Milo's character, they did a little, like, they did development a little bit between Michael and Milo, but very little development. Like, I didn't care when the doctor died, because I was like, who really gives a shit? Like, he's been in the movie a couple times at this point. Do I care? No. Didn't even really care about Martine's death. I feel like they really did her dirty because she was pretty much just there as the love interest.
Yeah.
Like, they literally told us a little bit of information about her. They're like, oh yeah, she's such an independent woman. She has two daughters. Where are the daughters? We never once saw her fucking daughters.
I genuinely missed that she was a mother. She was a mother?
Yeah.
I did not get that at all.
Because when she was in the hospital, I think one of the police officers, like, mentioned that to him either, like, during, like...
I thought that was the nurse that was dead.
I'm pretty sure they were referring to the love interest, but...
Well, yeah, because... Well, no, Martine wasn't dead at that point, though.
Well, yeah, I didn't think she was dead at that
point. I thought you just said when they were talking about her death.
No.
You're confusing me now. I'm pretty sure they were talking about the nurse that just died.
I strictly remember that at one point of the movie, somebody had mentioned, like, somebody was, like, taunting him and being like, I don't know if it was one of the police officers, it could have been Milo, I don't really remember. But I remember somebody had mentioned, like, how, like, Michael would be ruining her life because she had her own family and stuff. I might be misconstruing information with one of the other characters because, again, they don't make this shit very easy to follow. But either way, even if she didn't have two daughters, they still didn't, like, give any sort of information about her life. And even if my knowledge is correct that they did say she had two daughters, never saw them. She never talked about them. And, like, there was a couple moments where we saw her at home, but, like, we didn't get any development or information about her life. She was literally just there to help the storyline move along, but that was pretty much it. Like, all the characters are pretty much disposable. So when people died, I was like, okay.
Yeah, right?
I don't care.
What are some vampire media you would suggest over this film? And this is the last question I had for you.
Like, movie-wise?
It could be movies, games, anything. What vampire media do you think would be better than this?
Honestly, I'm a pretty hardcore fan of the Vampire Diaries. I watched that shit from beginning to end, and
You also watched the originals, and yeah. You watched Legacy.
Yeah. I would say that is a really good series, and they definitely do a much better job with character development than this. I mean, obviously, they had a lot more time on their hands to do that.
They had, like, 9 seasons, was it, of Vampire Diaries?
Yeah, I could definitely list a lot more than just the Vampire Diaries. Like, I would say a lot of other medias have done a better job. Resident Evil.
Oh, quick. But Vampire Media versus Morbius. This or that. All right, Morbius versus Vampire Diaries.
Wait, what am I doing?
Which one are you picking that over the other?
Obviously Vampire Diaries.
Morbius versus Dracula.
I don't even know if I've watched any of the Dracula shit.
Literally any Dracula.
I can't say I have.
Damn. Morbius versus Interview with a Vampire.
Definitely Interview with a Vampire.
Morbius versus Twilight.
Definitely Twilight. Even though Twilight is definitely, like, overhyped at this point, I would still pick Twilight.
Morbius versus Vampire the Masquerade.
I don't know too much about Vampire Masquerade, but I guess I would still pick that.
Good girl. Okay, here's one. It's not a vampire movie, but just for the people, just for the laughs, Morbius versus Batman.
Which one?
Any Batman.
Batman.
There you go. Just because I feel like it was a missed opportunity for them to, for someone to just see him with bats and be like, who is that? Batman? Like... It was such an easy joke that they missed out on. But anyway. All right, so that was my question. Did you have any questions for me?
Not that I can think of. Nope.
All right, well, if you want more, if you want to take another gamble on whether or not there's going to be good vampire media, coming in May, there's going to be a Vampire the Masquerade video game called Swan Song. I was very much looking forward to this game, and then I found out the people who made it are the same people who made that game, The Council. Do you remember when I played The Council?
Nope.
Exactly. So, I don't know, but I'm still probably gonna buy it. Coming out in May. Keep your eyes out, everyone. Otherwise, you got anything to plug?
Nope.
Well, wait, I got another one. Morbius versus Dark Pictures Anthology House of Ashes, because those were technically vampires.
You already know what I'm going to pick. I'm never going to pick Morbius. Why would I? Literally every option you've given me, and I've picked anything over a fucking Morbius. So why in the world, in this instance, would I pick Morbius? That's my question for you.
Morbius versus Count Chocula.
I don't even know what that shit is.
It's a cereal with a vampire mascot.
Sure, the cereal.
You heard it here first, folks. Count Chocula is why it goes down better than Morbius.
I would literally pick a piece of shit that's shaped as a vampire over the movie.
There you go. All right. So we are doing a doubleheader today. Well, not record, not like release wise. Immediately after this, we're going to be recording A Mystery Motel, which is going to be coming out a week out the next week after this episode's released. So get ready, because next week you're going to be hearing Mystery Motel 4, Death on the Nile. And thankfully, there's no vampires.